This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Good evening and welcome to the Movie Review Show on Vectis Radio. Soon to come to you on 104.6 FM on the Isle of Wight. 4th of November is the date and I expect you all to be driving around with your radios on in anticipation. My name is Tosin and I will hold your sonic hand through the next hour of filmic goodness. With me in the studio today is one person, Sean.
Hello there.
Hey Sean, how are you doing, man?
Yeah, pretty good, pretty good.
Yeah, we do not have Sharon with us today, so it is a bit of a bloke fest. And let's see. No. Seeing as one of our films is called Mother, I think we can avoid that. I gotta avoid that. How have things been going with you?
Yeah, pretty good really. As I say, I watched Mother. I did see Close Encounters early on in the week, mm-hmm. and we spoke about it last week, so I've also seen it this week. Mm-hmm. But that's the three.
Sorry, just in case that was a bit confusing, we spoke about the film It.
Oh, yeah.
Last week.
It.
Yeah. Because when you said you spoke about It last week, we didn't speak about Close Encounters. What are you about?
Yeah. So I went to see It.
It's a bit of a confusing film title.
My thoughts on It.
No, we'll keep that until later. Okay. Just tell me, so Close Encounters, this was like a special anniversary thing or something, was it?
Sure, it was. Yeah, it was the, it came out in 77, so what would that be, 40 years? Would it be 40? Yeah, must be 40 years, yeah.
It should be 40 years.
A 40-year anniversary. I remember seeing this while I would have been 17, and I didn't really like it. It wasn't really my sort of film.
Yeah.
Star Wars came out around about the same time. So it's like Star Wars was brilliant. The Close Encounters, wasn't really sure.
Yeah.
My sister, who was older than me, and a lot of other people said, oh, yeah, it's... Because, I mean, around this time, there were lots of UFO sightings.
Yep.
It was like major business, Men in Black, visiting people. And so it was great. But I really, really enjoyed it, seeing it on the screen again. Really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great movie. Great movie. Lots of effects. And it hasn't really aged, I didn't think. It hadn't really aged. There wasn't anything I could say, that's... Because some films do age, don't they? Some films do age.
Yeah, you look at them and you go, oh, my word, that's a bit shonky.
That's exactly. But this still stood the test of time. Great movie. And
because it's more of a thinky movie than Star Wars is like, you know, pew 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 pew, pew, yeah, pew, yeah, pew, yeah. Whiz bang,
and you know my taste in films was like, whoa, great stuff, just what we wanted.
It's a western in space.
It's a western in space.
But Close Encounters is a lot more of a thinky sci-fi.
Yeah, exactly. But like I say, that particular era during the 70s.
Yep.
I mean, people were fascinated with the UFOs. I think there was a whole series of Orbis publications.
About what happened to Roswell.
UFOs, yeah, all those things.
Area 51.
And everybody was seeing things. But the one thing that I noticed with the Close Encounters film is that at the beginning, it starts off where they find this training flight, these old World War II aeroplanes.
Yep.
Which got lost in 1945.
Yep.
That was the thing that started the Bermuda Triangle. That was like... Referred to the Bermuda Triangle.
Things disappear.
So this little training flight, it was a training flight and it disappeared. And no one ever found out where they were. No one knew what happened to it. So all these, they just appear in the desert. They still start, they still fire up. They're like, whoa. And then you see a big ship in Mexico. It's just sort of turned up somewhere. I think it was called the Texcoco or something. But there's like a massive ship that's still just right in the middle of a desert, desert. So that's how it starts off. So they obviously used those bits around at the time, you know.
Oh, the bits
to set it up. Yeah. What are in the books, like the disappearance of flight 407, or I can't really remember the number.
And then they started the film.
Yeah, they started the film with that. So
it was quite relevant.
He's got lost in 1945. You know, it's a big win.
Yeah.
He's got lost in 1945, and this is, you know, so yeah. I actually watched a thing about the Bermuda Triangle, and they explained all the things that they thought would happen to the planes, really.
Yeah.
So, but I won't go into that.
That's for another film.
That's for another film, yeah. At the end. I mean, I don't think there's any spoilers, because people would have watched it if they watched it.
Yeah, Close Encounters, the film's 40 years old. If you haven't watched it by now, you're probably not going to watch it.
So at the end of the film, when the massive... a spacecraft lands, the pilots come out and yep. the sailors, and so they all sort of so. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. Richard Dreyfuss is. He's really good in this.
He's good. He's intense.
He is intense.
That's the thing. I remember Close Encounters. I've only ever seen the film once.
Yeah.
And I just really remember thinking, this is intense. This isn't the playful Steven Spielberg I was expecting. Where did he go?
That's it.
But obviously he said it's a classic, but it's a totally different type of film
to
what you might be expect.
Apparently there's a special edition. This wasn't the special edition, yeah. And I've never seen the special edition. So, but someone did tell me that it's when he goes inside the
spacecraft. You get to see inside the spacecraft at the end because the film ends with him pretty much leaving Earth, and which Steven Spielberg has had issues with the ending now. He's like, well, I made that film as a young man. Now that I'm a dad, I probably wouldn't have edited the film that way, because he's like, because now as a dad, I'm thinking, he leaves his kid, he leaves his wife, he just leaves them because I'm going to go hang out with these aliens. And he's like, yeah, that was a young man making that film. That's a bit weird.
But what is interesting is that actually, later on, I went to Devil's Tower in Wyoming.
Oh yeah,
so
I've
actually been to that
to the hill, filmed. The hill, to the hill, Close Encounters.
To that little place. It's quite funny. It's right in the middle of nowhere. I've got some photographs of it. I'll have to bring them in. But yeah, no, Close Encounters is a good movie to watch. I enjoyed it.
Good stuff. You bring them in, and we'll put them up on Twitter.
we'll do. Right,
cool. So now on to this evening, the films we're going to be talking about. It's Your Majesty time with Dame Judi Dench on the Isle of Wight in Victoria and Abdul. Things get weird as they tend to when Darren Aronofsky's around, with Jennifer Lawrence, Javier Bardem, Ed Harris, and Michelle Pfeiffer in Mother. And we somehow defy death, convention, and good taste with Colin Firth, Taron Egerton, Mark Strong, Julianne Moore, and a host of others in Kingsman: The Golden Circle. So let's kick off with the first film that we have up that we've watched this week, which is Victoria and Abdul. But before we do it, here's a little taste of what the film is all about.
Abdul, you will travel to England, to the royal household. You will present the Queen with a ceremonial coin.
Whatever you do, you must not look at Her Majesty.
We are here for a greater purpose.
You are a servant no longer. You will teach me Urdu and the Quran.
You've upset the order of everything.
Not this Indian peasant. Or we will have you certified insane.
I am cantankerous. I am perhaps disagreeably attached to power, but I am anything but insane. I am Queen of England, Empress of India. Abdul has risen on his own merits. Now he is my friend.
Good old Dame Judi Dench.
Dame Judi Dench. Like, even there, you just get this thing that comes across, and you know, yeah, that is Judi Dench for you. She is just awesome. And she just comes across as, because this is the second time she's playing Queen Victoria. Yeah. The first time was in Mrs. Brown, which was made, probably about 20 years ago.
I've got to say, it must be about that. Was that Billy Connolly?
Billy Connolly played John Brown in that, and she played Mrs. Brown. And that was this is pretty much kind of like a sequel to that, kind of. It's not directed by the same people or anything like that, but it's almost because they say that in her life, she had like three great relationships with men. So there was obviously with Albert. So that's where everything Victoria and Albert. I mean, on the island, you have a whole bunch of things where you have a Victoria Road, and very close to that is an Albert Road, and then there's a Consort Road. I went to school in London in the South Kensington area, where there's a Victoria and Albert Museum. You have the Royal Albert Hall. There's you have all these different things.
The old Vic.
Yeah. And so they just had so many things about them, and so they were like this great, big, massive power couple. And then after he died, you had. She went into a depression, and it was John Brown who helped get out of that. And they made a film of that, about that. I think, oh my God, I think I might have Michael Winterbottom who made that film. And that was all about her relationship with John Brown, where she was called Mrs. Brown because of the relationship was so close, and people were getting really, everybody in the court, they were getting, oh, I don't know, we don't like about this. I mean, this guy is just a servant. He's just like, he just looks after the horses like in Scotland, and he's a Scottish guy as well. Oh my God, what's going on? Why is he so close? We don't like this. And he had all this kind of like, and it was all about the political intrigue about trying to stop this relationship, which seemed to revitalize her and seemed to give her life again. And but obviously there were a whole bunch of people who did not like it.
Yeah, they don't like in those days. So can't upset the order of
you
things.
You can't accept the order of things. This order of things that they keep talking about. And so you now have this film. Now, I'm not sure how many years after John Brown died.
Is John Brown in this?
No, John.
So he's just totally. Oh, no. He's already died. Is he referenced at all?
He is referenced. Yep. He is referenced. There's a bit because this film is obviously called Victoria and Abdul.
Yeah.
And it's about, even you heard in there, it's about an Indian clerk. And this happens in 1887. 1887, that's when the film starts. It starts off in Agra in India, and you have this guy, Abdul, who's a clerk. He goes into a...
Civil service?
Well, no, he goes into a prison, and he keeps a ledger of all the prisoners in the prison. And then somebody shows up to him and says, ah, yes, you're the right height. Come on with me, Abdul. You have been selected. That's what you hear in the clip. It's like, you have been selected to present a ceremonial coin to Her Majesty. So they grab him and this other guy, and they grab him. In the film, it said mainly because he's tall. Because he's tall, they grab him and they grab this other guy who's played by Abdul, played by Ali Faisal, who apparently is a Nollywood, not Nollywood, a Bollywood actor. This is like his big English break. And Adil Akhtar, who you would know, you've seen, he's been in a lot of English TV. He's a British actor of Indian origin, and he's hilarious. He's just so hilarious. The things he just keeps coming out with and everything. And they shove them on a boat 2 months to get to England. And the reason that they get to England is that they're going to present this coin to Queen Victoria. So at one point, and from that point, when they get there, things transpire. And then a relationship develops where Queen Victoria takes a shine to him. And Queen Victoria, when you meet her in the film, she is bored. You can, like, the opening sequence of this film where you actually meet Queen Victoria, it makes you think, oh my God, it must suck to be the queen. It really, really does, because you can't choose what you wear, you can't choose what you eat, you can't choose where you go. You might, sure enough, you have all this power and privilege, but people are telling you exactly what to do.
What to do, yeah.
And that's, you just get this feeling from her. And Dame Judi Dench, Judi Dench just totally sells it, that this woman is bored of life, that she's alive, she just keeps going on. There's a bit where she even says something about the fact that everybody I love dies, I just keep going on. And it really gets across. I know sometimes some people, when they think we should get rid of the royal family and all that kind of stuff, and they go, they're just a bunch of freeloaders who just sit around and do nothing. But this film, just the opening bit makes you think it would suck to have that job. So this Abdul guy comes along and she kind of gets revitalized. She gets revitalized and she says, everybody leave the room, I want to talk to him and all that kind of stuff. And it's like the John Brown thing all over again. Everybody's just kind of like, oh, I don't like this. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And he's an Indian as well. Oh, my God. It's an Indian. Why are you doing
outrage.
This?
Outrage.
Yeah, there's this outrage. And there's this sort of like rampant racism that's coming in, which, of course, you know is going to happen. I mean, it's 1887, for goodness sake. This was a time when people thought that just because they were white, they could go and take over a country because they were better...
Qualified,
yeah. They were better qualified to rule than these other people who are brown, for goodness sake.
That's right, yeah.
And so you know that's going to happen. And there's bits where they go, oh, he's like the brown John Brown. And all the, they say all this sort of things. And I think the film does really well at crafting this relationship between them and also showing this. And it has a whole bunch of really good English actors essentially playing the pompous, turning the pomposity up to 11, and just being as, like, have Olivia Williams as a member of the household. Eddie Izzard shows up as, like,
the
queen.
Yeah, I was going to say, how is Eddie Izzard?
Eddie Izzard is very good.
It's surprising, really, because he's always been known as a comedian, but what he has been, and he was in a TV dramatization of Treasure Island, and he was really good in that.
Yeah.
As long as John Silver, and he's quite a versatile actor, really.
Eddie Izzard is a very good actor. Yeah. He's a very good actor, and he's brilliant in this as Bertie, because obviously there's the real life, and so they have a story they want to tell, which is about Victoria and Abdul. And that's the story they stick to. But they put all these hints as to what these other characters were like. Like the first time you hear about, they mention Bertie. That's what they call the Queen's son in the film. The first time they mentioned him, I think he went to become King Edward the fifth?
Seventh,
yeah.
Edward the Seventh. So what did you have? Yeah, Edward the Seventh, George the Fifth, Edward the Eighth. Yeah,
yeah.
So
okay.
He would have been.
Yeah, he went to become Edward the Seventh, but everybody calls him Bertie. And the first time you hear about him is like, wait, he's on his way back from Monte Carlo, and that's just like a small hint because you go and you check Wikipedia afterwards to find out that he had a massive gambling habit.
Yeah.
So you have all these different things, but at the center of the film is this relationship between Queen Victoria and this guy Abdul Karim, and Abdul. The way the film presents him, he is presented that this relationship was genuine. It's been that this relationship was genuine, but at the same time, there's a little thing about this guy was a bit of a chancer. He was a bit of a chancer, and I know the historians say that he might, like, for instance, he starts off by telling her all these stories, and he tells her the story about, there are these great things in India and the Taj Mahal. Have you ever been to the Taj Mahal? Oh, it's beautiful, it's this, it's that. And even when he's talking, there is an element of it where you feel like he is just, that he is making this stuff up. There's an element of it where you feel like he's talking out
he's
of his posterior. Yeah. There's an element of it where he's playing a game, currying favor, all that kind of stuff. And then the queen is like, well, and there's a bit of it where you feel almost as if the queen might know, but she doesn't care. She doesn't care because this is something different from everything that she does. Like, you know, the fact that at the beginning of the film that she's kind of bored and all that. And then this comes up and it just makes everybody go up in arms and they start plotting about how we're going to bring this Indian down. Who dares talk to the queen and who dares upset the order? What are we going to do about this Indian? When you hear that, it's kind of like, yeah, you know what's going to happen. You can check Wikipedia and see what happened. But I think it's a very, very well-made film. And also, we had to start with this film because obviously we're talking about Queen Victoria and we're talking about where she loved to spend all of her summers with her, where she had most of her family, where she died, the Isle of Wight, Osborne House. And so there's bits that show up and they show Osborne House. And have you ever been to Osborne House?
I've been to Osborne House, yeah.
And so you're just watching it, you're just going, I've been there. Oh my God, it's Osborne House. and it's quite cool because there's a bit where Abdul is doing one of his usual things and he's talking to her and he's talking about the fact that he's like, you have to have a Durbar room. Like, you know, if you're the Empress of India, like you should have a Durbar room because all the great people in India, all the great rulers, they have a Durbar room. And she's like, really? Well, I will have a Durbar room too. I said, where shall we put it? Well, the Isle of Wight, of course. And you're like, yay, the Isle of Wight.
Cool.
And so they do scenes. There's a shot that there's a sequence that they shoot, which is obviously for anybody who lives on the Isle of Wight and has been to Osborne House, it's obviously shot in the gardens of Osborne House, but it's supposed to be Florence in Italy.
I see. Yeah.
So
is she actually in India when Abdul gives her the coin?
No. Queen Victoria never made it to India.
Oh, right, okay.
She was never...
Oh, wow.
And that was the thing. One of the things is that they actually say... He asked, have you ever been to India? She's like, no, I'm not allowed. They say that it's too risky. I'll probably get assassinated by somebody. Because obviously it's an occupation.
Yeah.
Obviously the Indians didn't invite the English and say, hey, come rule us. So it's... So there is a bit of needle in there, and that plays a bit in the plot. And you have the contrast between Abdul and Muhammad. Muhammad being the guy who was
the guy who went with him.
Yeah, the guy who went with him because they didn't even know each other beforehand. They just got picked randomly. Said, "That's it, you're going over to the other side of the world," and then they were supposed to go there, present this coin to Queen Victoria, and then get back on a boat and go back for another 2 months back to India. That was the plan. That was the plan, and that's just how. For me, it rankled that you think it's okay to just grab somebody and say you don't really have a choice, get on there. And Mohammed, because he was never supposed to be the one who went, there was supposed to be a taller guy who went, but apparently there's this recurring joke about this guy. The other chap had an incident with an elephant. and he wants nothing more than to get out of this in his words, barbaric country, this barbaric cold country, and go back to India. And then there's this sort of recurring thing about how things keep getting in the way so he can't go back to India. Aww. And he is brilliant, but he's the voice that says that shows you that, look, Indians are not happy about the fact that the English are here, that the English have taken over our country, that the English are trying to tell us how to live, how to dress. He's the one he has one particular good scene. There's a scene that's kind of like, you know, where he comes up and he almost like, it's almost like a manifesto that he gives to Prince, to Bertie.
To Bertie, yeah.
And the guy, Lord Ponsonby, who's the head of the household, and I like that scene because of what he says and the way he talks about, like, you know, your whole thing and all that kind of stuff. And if this was a white guy who was doing everything that Abdul was doing, you guys wouldn't bat an eyelid. But now it's kind of like, he's essentially doing exactly the same thing that all of you do. You're all backstabbers, money grabbers, trying to grab a. And I really like that. And I think Adil Akhtar, who plays him, does it brilliantly. I think he plays him brilliantly. He's funny when he needs to be funny. He's despairing when he needs to be funny. And he's, even in his despair, he's still kind of funny. And and it just carried it on all the way through to the film.
It looks like you enjoyed it. You've got a you've got a nice smile on your face.
I enjoyed it. Yeah. I really did enjoy it. I mean, there are bits, a bit like, I was talking about Detroit the other week, and it's a bit like Detroit. There are bits that just make you smack your head with just how racist, how racist things got, and just how racist people thought it was okay to be. And it makes you... The thing is, I try and give people as much of a benefit of a doubt, but I just don't understand... I don't understand the kind of thinking that would take you to the point where you say it's okay to treat people like this for no other reason other than the fact that they are a different skin color. And that's just...
Wrinkles.
There's bits in the film that, as much as it's a nice, fluffy film, it's they're hard to watch. There are bits of it that are hard to watch because of it, and especially because it's no spoiler to say that Queen Victoria at some point died. and especially as to when the film goes on and the film tells you about what happened after, because obviously she was his protection. She was Abdul's protection as long as she was alive and all that.
Yeah.
But like later on when the film tells you, even like, you know, at the end of the film when they tell you all the lines and stuff, what happened to him afterwards when the protection was no longer there, it's just kind of like, oh man, come on.
You can imagine, yeah.
But at the same time, I do feel like the film does do a little bit where you feel like this guy might just be playing all the sides against stuff. They make it feel like there was something genuine between him and Queen Victoria, that it might have been, the way the film does it is like, it might have been a bit romantic on at least one of their parts.
Oh, wow.
It might have been a bit romantic on at least one of the parts, but it doesn't go the whole hog and go, and yes, they had a full-blown relationship. It doesn't go that way. So for all you people who are about to be up in arms, no, it doesn't do that. But it's a really, really good film. I would give it, I think I would give it a 3 out of 5.
A 3 out of 5.
Cool. I
will be seeing it, so I'll be able to give my opinions on it.
Go watch it. I think, as I say, it's nice. It's I love that sort of window on a world at that time, how things were.
Did you ever see that film? What's that film called? Was it A Divided Kingdom or something?
United Kingdom.
United Kingdom, yeah.
Yes, I did see that.
About Mountbatten in India. I did enjoy that.
Oh, wait.
Was it?
Mountbatten, I think, is that Viceroy's House?
Viceroy's House, sorry, there's a few of these.
Yeah, Viceroy's House is about the final days of before India gets its independence.
Independence, yeah.
Yeah, Viceroy's House, and United Kingdom is about Botswana.
That's right, which was Botswana land. Yeah, that was the marriage, yeah.
Yeah, it was between Seretsekama and... his wife.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
But yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, so I'm thinking of Viceroy's House. Viceroy's House.
I never saw that one.
You didn't see that?
No.
That was I enjoyed that. You know, it was historical. I don't suppose you'd call it an epic so much, but, you know, historical story. So I enjoyed that, and I'm hoping that I will enjoy this one. It's a funny era, that Victorian era, isn't it? It's like, because I guess it went on for so long.
It went on for quite a while.
60 years, I think she was.
She only got overtaken by a current queen.
Yeah, that's
recently.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think George III was the 60 years as king, and Victoria was 60 years as queen. So, I mean, that's like I guess, the height of the, you know, when our imperialistic thing it's the height of, would be when, yeah, you know.
It's the height of the English Empire.
Empire, yeah.
But the weird thing that the film sort of puts across is that it makes Victoria herself a lot more of a sympathetic character. Like, she has this whole thing about, look, I'm the Empress of India. I want to learn Urdu.
Yeah.
And so there's a whole section of the whole film about how, like, Abdul is teaching her Urdu. And the people, when they realize that Urdu is, like, is predominantly a Muslim language, they're like, oh, my God, it's a Muslim language. But you're the head of the Church of England. But what comes across from her is, like, look, if I am supposed to be the empress of this place, I should learn something about this place. I should represent these people well. And I think it puts her in a good light, that it makes it sound like, you know, that whole thing about she might have been queen, but she didn't have that much power to do anything.
No.
To say, okay, we're going to treat these people better or anything like that. I don't know whether she really was that benevolent and that much of, like, you know, everybody's like the same, but it's...
I should imagine that someone in that position was probably didn't get the whole story about things that went on. I should imagine, because, I mean, the only information she was probably going to get about anything that went on would be from some of her courtiers and maybe the Prime Minister and things. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but that also plays a part in the film, exactly what she's being told and what information she's been given about different things plays that. All right, but that's Victoria and Abdul. I can talk a lot more about the film. There's actually quite a bit in the film that's to unpack, but unfortunately we don't have time to delve into it too deeply. And, so we're going to go on an advert break and we will be back very soon after these.
Stay social and get in touch. Give us a call on 01983-240-666 or add us on Skype. It's Vectis.radio. The World Wide Web never felt so local. So local.
Hello and welcome back to the Movie Review Show. We are with you until 7 o'clock tonight, at which time we shall be switching over to Small Brook Stadium for the Speedway with Humpty and Shania. And after that, we will have Brian Curtis having whatever time he's left with after Humpty and Shania are done with the Eclectic Mix. Right, we shall carry on now with movies, and we're going to talk about a film that I'm expecting to be a bit of a head trip. Sean, you have seen this. I have not had the privilege yet. But first of all, let's play a little bit of a snippet of what this film, well, what to expect in this film.
Hello.
Hello. And what brings you to us?
He's a stranger.
Who's that?
Did you know he had a wife?
What were you doing in their luggage?
Why don't you want kids?
Why are you crying?
Is it him?
Hey, who are you?
Who are you?
Am I going to lose you?
What are you doing?
What did you do? Are you telling me the truth?
Yeah. Cool. So, Sean, if you can, try and unpack that for us.
Okay. Well, this was a film, and I came out, and I wasn't sure whether I liked this film or not. It was just, like, so strange. I thought it was going to started off a bit like The Innocents, a 1963 film.
Oh, yeah?
But basically, the story starts off is this girl wakes up, or woman wakes up, and she's with a husband who's a poet,
yep,
like a poet, who's got a bit of a mental block. And she spent all the time on this house, doing up this house. And she looks at her husband, and he's stuck. And then all of a sudden, there's a knock at the door, and the stranger, Ed Harris, who's great, turns up, and he goes, "Oh, I thought this was a," and her husband invites her in.
Oh, he thinks it's a B&B or something.
Yeah, thinks it's a B&B. So he sort of gets invited in, and they get on really well, the husband and this old boy. But of course, she's like, you know, what's going on? He's a stranger. Yeah. Anyway, she goes to bed, and then she wakes up, and she can hear someone being sick. And she goes down and she sees, I mean, I don't think there'd be much spoilers, the old guy, Ed Harris' character, is being sick.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a wound on his side. And the husband covers up the wound. And she's like, well, he goes, it'll be okay, he's all right, he'll be all right, he'll be all right.
Yep.
Next day, or a little bit later, up turns Ed Harris's wife. Michelle Pfeiffer, who's really, really done up. And she's like a bit of a lush, you know, she likes a drink.
Yeah.
And she's quite nasty, you know, so she's quite nasty to the character.
To Jennifer Lawrence.
And then what happens is suddenly more and more people start turning up. More, you know, just strangers are like, hey, yeah.
Yeah.
The two sons, they've got two sons. And they turn up and it's like, you're going to take me out the wheel, you're going to cut me out the wheel. And one son kills the other son and runs off. So it's all going, it's like, what's going on? And then it's all fairly weird. Anyway, and then Jennifer Lawrence becomes pregnant. So she's like, oh, and he starts being able, he said, oh, I'm real happy. He starts
able to. Okay, no, I feel like this is a film that's really, really hard to spoil, because even if you tell, you say exactly what happens in the film.
That's it. You can't spoil it. You just need to go and see it, because it is an experience.
Yeah, so this is Darren Aronofsky. It's the same guy who directed Black Swan. He's the same guy who directed Noah, directed Requiem for a Dream, The Fountain. I think it's probably the film, because The Fountain with Hugh Jackman and Rachel Weisz, which is the film that everybody's like, what the heck?
It's very, very strange, almost like Lynch films, you know, David Lynch films.
Yeah, a bit like a dream.
Yeah, really, really strange. And it gets even more bizarre. It gets even more of a dream when, as the film goes on. So basically all these people start turning up, he becomes a hero, everybody wants to see this guy's poems, and he says to his wife, he says, oh, go in, it's okay. She goes, but all these people that are turning up, and they start invading the house. So they start coming in the house, and she's spent ages on this house, and she's set this nice stink up, and she says to the guy, she says, oh, don't sit on that, please, but they're just sort of wrecking the place.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, so she gets all a bit upset.
Yeah, he has this whole thing where he does a film sometimes, and you're not sure whether what you're watching is actually happening or whether it's just in a character's head.
I thought it was a dream. I thought that, especially towards the end, I was thinking, oh, this is obviously she's dreaming, that it's something to do with, being a mother or being that. That's what I thought, because of the pregnancy thing.
Yeah, but that's the kind of thing that he does. And that's what I'm expecting from the film. I'm expecting it to be like, a couple of really, really well constructed scenes and set pieces and stuff, but you might not really know what's going on.
You really don't know what's going on. But Kirsten Wiig pops up as the publicist, and then in the end she does some, towards the end when it's all going chaotic, she's less like, it's just like crazy, this whole film just turns, whoa, and there's some crazy stuff going on. It's like the wall is, there's riots.
There's bits in the trailer where the wall looks fine. It also looks as if the wall just sort of petrifies or starts weeping. And so it seems like but even from the trailers, people were saying that you couldn't tell, is this supposed to be a horror? Is this supposed to be a family drama? Is this supposed to be a psychological? No, you couldn't really tell.
You couldn't tell. But I thought, I gave this loads of thought afterwards. And I mean, I only saw it yesterday, and I'm still thinking about it now.
Yeah.
And I was all day I've been thinking about it. And it's really weird, because I think some of the characters in it are it's an allegory for the Bible.
Okay.
I do. I think... And what made me think, more than anything else, because I was thinking about, because this bit with the side.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the wound on the side.
The wound on the side. And I was thinking, what was that all about? And then I forgot about it. But pretty soon after that, his wife turns up.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle Pfeiffer turns up pretty much after this and says, oh, I'm here. And I think, and then I was thinking, right, okay, you've got two brothers. One kills the other brother.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Clears off.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, it's taken me, I still don't know if I like it or not. But I think, there's all these characters in it, and there's a character that I figure could be, there's a character towards the end when all the place is being invaded, and he's putting this like mark on people.
Mm.
And I was thinking, John the Baptist, maybe, he's like, so it's very, I won't say what happens at the end, because that would sort of spoil it all, but it's like, it's chaos.
It's also like, it's the kind of film that you need to watch with a group of people, and then you sit down there for the next 10 years or something like that, going to be going, exactly what was that film about? Well, I think it was about this. Well, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I came out of the cinema, and there were three other people in there that had seen it. And as we were walking up the road, and they were sort of as astonished as I was, because, well, I wasn't expecting that. I thought it was going to be some sort of creepy horror film. It's not really a horror film. I wouldn't call it a horror film.
Yeah.
I mean, from the trailer, it sort of looks at a horror film, especially with all the people walking.
It looks like it has some sort of horror elements in it.
I mean, I didn't like Black Swan. I got to be honest, I didn't.
Yeah.
It was okay, but I didn't like Black Swan, so I wasn't expecting to like this, and I didn't know at the time if I did. As I say, it's just like a whole. It's a film you need to see because it's like a whole strange. I don't know, Lynch, Kafka. It's just it's bizarre. But
it sounds like it's more of an experience.
I think an experience, yeah. And I don't know how it will do at the box office, but it would be interesting to see. But I think the people went in expecting like a horror film, like Rosemary's Baby or something along those lines. But it just, it's chaos. But I did really enjoy the last, you know, the chaotic scenes with the riot police and, you know, just sort of soldiers turning up from nowhere and people just going, it's just crazy, man. It's just like crazy. And I did think at the end when I was thinking about it all, and I thought, today, towards the end of the day, I think I liked it and I will be seeing this again.
All
just
right.
to see,
just
yeah.
Just to try and figure it out.
Just to try and figure out a little bit more. And I think, I would say that if you're interested in films, this would be an interesting film to see. I think it makes you angry. I think, you know, it's disturbing. It just brings out so many different thoughts. You know, I mean, I got people coming into the house. I got really angry. I was like, yeah, why don't you just tell them to get out? Why don't you just tell them that I don't want them here?
I don't want you here. No. I don't want you in my house.
But the Jennifer character loves her husband so much. Yeah. You know, she sort of listened to what I said. Oh, he's fine. You know, yeah, they can bring them all in. Bring them all in. So you've got all these strange characters, you know. There's some interesting characters, but the whole house is like mobbed yeah. by loads and loads of people, and it gets her really upset. And I thought, oh, this is the Rosemary Baby thing, I guess.
Well, because there were bits of this when I saw it that I started thinking. I mean, obviously, from a trailer, it's stupid to try and figure. Well, especially when it's Darren Aronofsky, stupid to try and figure out what's going on. But there were bits where I kind of felt like, I think I might know what's going on here when I was watching the trailer.
But
it reminded me a little bit of, some bits of the trailer put me in mind of a film called Kill List.
Right, yeah, I've heard of that film.
Ben Wheatley. And there's something like that in that film where I thought I was watching one film, and then halfway through I'm like, what? Am I? Then you finish and you're like, what film was I watching?
Another thing, there's a bit in the movie when the poet, obviously her husband, he says, that's what I do, I create.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, you know, I was thinking, maybe is this
supposed to be God?
And obviously she's making this house, she's making this beautiful house already. Yeah. So this is like the world, and then all these people are coming in ready to, you know, sort of ruin the world and, you know, destroy her, what she spent ages making, you know. So they all come in, you know, and almost, I think it's almost like, well, dare I say, Armageddon almost at the end, you know. So, yeah, it is a real, real mind
trip.
I was going to say something else.
Let's use the word trip.
But I do think that's my take on it, is that it's maybe an allegory for the earth being destroyed by humans. Yeah, because, you know, as I say, the bit with the sink, well, no, this is fine, we can sit on this, and it breaks, and you know, and all this sort of stuff. So,
all right, cool. But I know it might change by tomorrow evening, but how many stars would you give it?
Well, originally, I don't know, it's difficult to say. For me personally, I should imagine this film's quite controversial, and I should think there'd be quite a few people that will probably hate it.
I would imagine
for me, I'm going to give this a 4.
Yeah, because this is a film that I think is going to be a total Marmite film.
It is.
Without even watching it, I was like, this film, there's going to be people who are going to hate it, and there's going to be people who are going to say, it's the best thing ever.
Yeah.
It's the film of the year.
Yeah.
Give Jennifer Lawrence another Oscar.
She was brilliant. She was brilliant. And I think it's a film I need to see again. I really think a film to see,
cool.
see again.
And now, going on to our final film of the evening, we have Kingsman: The Golden Circle, and here's a little snippet of what to expect when you see that film.
Say goodbye to the Kingsman.
We follow the Doomsday Protocol. Get your box Welcome to Statesman.
As your American cousins, all our resources are yours.
Thought everything was supposed to be bigger in America. Is this why you overcompensate with these massive cars?
Now you're going to see the difference between a Kingsman and a Statesman.
That'll make you want to slap your mama right there.
Kingsman, only in theaters.
What was that tune? Get your rocks off. Yeah, who did that? Was ZZ Top?
Is that T-Rex?
T-Rex.
Mark Bolan, isn't it?
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. I suppose it is just a modernized version, I guess.
Yeah, probably. Probably remastered or reproduced or something. Or remixed. So, yes, Kingsman, The Golden Circle. This is the sequel. This is the sequel to Kingsman, The Secret Service, which was a film that kind of blew everyone away because it was a kind of like a loving... It was a pastiche, it was a spoof, it was a homage to Bond movies of the 60s, pretty much. It was pretty much like making a sort of Sean Connery-era Bond, but with a little bit of the Roger Moore-era Bond thrown in, new things and everything like that. It was irreverent, it was R-rated, it was it was a massive hit because there were just so many things. Now, this is a film that I did not expect to be anywhere near as good as the first one because the first one just had so many things going for it. And when the first one finishes, it's kind of taking its characters to where its characters need to be.
I think it was a surprise. I think Kingsman was a surprise. People didn't know what to expect.
People didn't know what to expect the first one.
And when they did it, I mean, I thought it was going to be one of those that I probably would have been all right. But I was blown away, but I thought it was great.
I absolutely love the first Kingsman movie. I mean, it keeps doing things that surprise you. It keeps doing things that you're like, oh, what the? and then there's a bit at the end that has to do with like, it's pretty much like a Bubsy Berkeley number with this music in the background. And there's just this, I don't want to say what it is, but there's all this stuff going on that you're thinking, what the heck? I can't believe they're doing that. And it's so, and I think that bit at the end of that film, it was made, I don't think it was made with the director and the writer, Matthew Vaughn and Jen Goldman. I don't think they were thinking about making another one. I think they were just thinking, we just want to make this one film. So the characters, because you have this, people say the Pygmalion kind of My Fair Lady thing where Colin Firth as a gentleman spy takes Eggsy, this street London kid, and takes him up to be a gentleman spy and all that kind of stuff. So by the end of the first film, Eggsy is this gentleman spy. There's a bit of a controversial ending to the first film that people were kind of like up in arms about and all that. But the thing is, when at the end of the first Kingsman, what is there? It's just, okay, now I've become the spy. I just have to go and take on the world and save the world. So the first film had this whole thing about guy from this background becoming the spy and all. And it's not really until late in the first film that the plot kicks in as to what the big bad guy is trying to do.
Sure.
So all you have now, once you've delivered the characters, the characters don't really have anywhere to go. It's just now about, okay, cool, here's another plot, someone's trying to destroy the world, let's go do that world in typical Kingsman style. And that's a bit what you get. So it's not as good as the first one. Didn't enjoy it as much as the first one, but it's still a good film.
Yeah, I figured that was probably my take on, I think.
Yeah, that's what I expected. Yeah. It's totally what I expected. It's totally, I feel like, if they managed to make a film as good as the first one, it would have been a total miracle.
Yeah, yeah.
It would have been I don't even know how they would have done that.
I think it's a bit like the John Wick movie.
Oh, yeah?
Like the first one.
Yeah.
It was absolutely brilliant because it was something different. The second John Wick movie was still good. I still enjoyed it, but it was...
It doesn't have that surprise of the first one. It doesn't have that sort of world building of the first one. Yeah. And so in this one, you have Julianne Moore, who is brilliant as the bad guy now. And she plays this woman called Poppy, who is in exile somewhere. They never really tell you where she is. But she's in this sort of like jungle area. But in this jungle area, she's rebuilt this place that she calls Poppy Land. And it looks like, you know, there's a 50s diner and there's a 50s cinema and all that kind of stuff. There's Elton John is in this film. And Elton John has a cameo that is hilarious the first time he shows up. But the more times he shows up, he Elton John gets less and less and less funny. And I wish I wish there was less Elton John. Because it was funny the first time, but after a while, it was law of diminishing returns. And she somehow manages to figure out a way of getting rid of the Kingsmen. So she pretty much blows up every single thing that they have. There's a whole bunch of people from the first film that just disappear, like really, really early on in this film. And then it becomes about It becomes about Eggsy, the main character, who just happened to not be at home when this thing happened. When she takes out all the Kingsmen, it becomes about Eggsy and Merlin, played by Mark Strong. And they, through a series of things, they end up in America and they end up meeting the Statesmen, who are the American version of Kingsmen, yeah, and all that. And it's quite cool. This is the second film released this year that has Channing Tatum in it. That the film starring Channing Tatum with that John Denver song, Country Roads, in it.
They like that song, don't they?
Yeah, they do like that song. I'm like, this is the second film I've seen this year that has that song in it, in like in a sort of pivotal emotional scene. And Channing Tatum, what the heck's going on? And Channing Tatum, he is getting, I think he's developing into an amazing actor.
I do, yeah, I really like him.
Because you know how all the Kingsmen, they have the names of Knights of the Round Table, like, yep, Galahad, Lancelot, all that. All the Statesmen are named after drinks. So Channing Tatum's tequila. Jeff Bridges shows up as the head of Statesmen and he's champagne. Whereas about anybody who knows what's good for them will call me champ. You have Pedro Pascal, who was in Game of Thrones as Prince Oberon. He shows up as whiskey. Halle Berry she's essentially the Q.
Yeah.
And she's called Ginger Ale. And it's quite, they have some fun with the difference between the English gentleman spy and the sort of good old boy honky tonk American thing.
I did. There's a bit in the trailer where Halle Berry... does anything go on between the Mark Strong character and the Halle Berry character? Because it's almost like they... you're not going to skip that.
That would be cool.
I'm interested to see that bit. That was the bit in the trailer that caught me more than anything else.
Well, there is a bit with the John Denver song. As I said, there's a bit where the song is used. And I think it's not really so much about... The way it's used and everything like that, I think it's the actor who plays this character. It's a bit of affection for the actor who plays this character, and the character itself, and the way he plays the character that makes this scene kind of like really, really emotional. Not really because of the storyline or anything like that, but it makes him a bit like, oh, that's kind of sweet. And the big thing is that Colin Firth is back, and quite frankly, one of the things I loved about the first Kingsman is that, well, spoiler. It's been part of the whole advertising for this film anyway, that they killed his character, Harry. Like, at the end of the first film, his character was definitely dead.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I loved that about the first Kingsman, that it was totally unexpected and just came out, you're like, oh my God. And for me, it cheapened a little bit when they started telling you that he was definitely going to be in the second film. But I think within the world of Kingsman, they come up with a really good reason for why he's still around. Within the worlds of the Kingsman, you're like when they start explaining, I'm like, wait, but. Okay, yeah, I guess that could work. So they come up with something, but it's good. I would give it, like the first Kingsman, I'll give a high 4 out of 5. I'll give this one a low 4, just about made it out of a 3 into the 4s.
Yeah.
For that. But I would say I would recommend anybody go watch it if they want to go. They say that Kingsman: The Golden Circle. I think it's brilliant. I think it has some things with robot dogs. It has some funny scenes with Elton John in it.
Elton John, are there any cameos in it?
Elton John is actually, he's in the film a lot more than you'd think.
But I mean, are there any other big star cameos by anyone?
No, there aren't big star carriers. There's an actor called Bruce Greenwood who plays the American president. You know him because he's been in a lot of stuff. He's one of those faces that when you see his face, you'd be like, oh yeah, I remember him. He was in blah 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 blah. Oh yeah, yeah. There's an actor called Bruce Greenwood, and the way he plays the American president, the American president's response to the bad guy's plan, I thought was hilarious, and it will make a lot of people. It's the kind of thing that would cause a lot of discussion.
Oh, okay, maybe.
The bad guy goes, do this or else, and the way the president reacts to it is, it will cause a lot of discussion. And there's also a scene that is a bit like the end of the first Kingsman, where they did something that was a bit sexist, but then again, that's because Bond movies are quite sexist, and it made people go up in arms. They do another scene like that at Glastonbury. They do something similar at Glastonbury that is a bit yuck. It's a bit, I don't know about that.
Okay,
but
sounds interesting.
Yeah, it will make some people great. It will make some people go up in arms or anything like that. But it's Kingsman, and they're irreverent. They don't make any apologies for it, and they're not really trying to. They're not trying to
do anything special.
They're not trying to make you feel happy. They're just there to do whatever it is. And if you get offended, you get offended.
Cool.
But anyway, so we're going to hand you now over to Smallbrook Stadium with Humpty and Shania for the Speedway tonight. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Sean, for joining us. We shall be back next week with some more movies and hopefully a Sharon.
Sharon may should be back next week, which will be good.
Yeah, cool. Until that time, take it easy. Go to the cinema. Go watch Mother.
And give us some feedback, because I would like to know what other people think of this movie. I really would like to know
People should go watch Mother, because it has an exclamation mark at the end. And then write on the Facebook page for Vectis Radio, Vectis Radio front page on Facebook. Tell us what you think about the film Mother.
That would be good.
Until next week, we'll see you guys. Take care.
Take care.
Good night.
Bye. www.vectisradio.com.